You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. We're back! I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
You almost forgot the little intro there.
It's been a while. I know. Like, we're, you know.
I'm still, my brain is still melted from watching Deadpool, so I'm not fully functional at this point.
Yeah, and we're not going to talk about Deadpool today, but if you haven't seen the film, please go see it. Probably the most badass film.
Yeah, we're probably going to be doing a whole episode on that later on.
There's no probably to it. It's definitely a thing.
give you all a few weeks catch up before we drop that one. But in the meantime, it's time to light one if you got one. What are we smoking this week, Brad?
Oh, this week we are smoking the Portugas 1845 Extra Forte.
You almost pronounced that.
I mean, I was pretty close. I mean, I was...
Partagas, not Portagas, but...
whatever. Partagas, I mean...
There's an A in that title.
Partagas, maybe? I don't know.
It's Partagas.
Partagas?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I haven't smoked any of their cigars before, so this is my first one. You know, what kind of turned me on to this cigar as I was looking at, the competition and... some of the Lajero and the wrapper, and then the Habano binder. Like, I've been a really big fan of this combination and kind of stuck on it. So this is definitely going to be more to your full body.
Yeah, I've had a lot of cigars with Lajero in it. I think it's the first one I've had that has a Lajero wrapper. So that gives it kind of an interesting.
Not the first. I mean, we did have the nasty ass shit.
Oh yeah, that was like entirely Lajero, but.
This is the first challenge cigar or I don't really know what I'm looking for. Like, oh yeah, we should just smoke this just to see if it puts it on our ass.
Yeah, the wrapper is Ecuadorian Habano Lajero, Connecticut Habano binder, and Dominican Piloto Cubano and Nicaraguan fillers.
Yes, and very complex here. A little bit of a spice from the Lajero that I'm really digging. The mouthfeel of the cigar, as far as the smoke and everything else that it produces, is very full, very hearty. I mean, we're smoking the smaller Robusto Gordo size, which is 5.5 by 52.
I can see the wrapper on this too is very militant looking, with like a silver eagle. I mean, we may have to pick up some of these for our steampunk convention, since the 1845. I mean, that kind of
absolutely
goes with the Victorian age of things.
And I gotta say, this was a very budget friendly cigar, and I'm really curious to see what it evolves to. Only in the first third here, since we just started the show, but as the main segment progresses, we'll give you folks feedback once we get to the half and then the final third of the cigar.
Yeah, it's definitely got a kick up front. It's definitely got some spice
This is definitely one that I'm glad that I'm
definitely tasting the Lajero.
I've got a full stomach and everything of that nature. Like, this probably isn't my wake up in the morning, fire this bad boy up before breakfast or anything.
Yeah, this may not be a 2 or 3 cigar session. This may be a one, because it's definitely not only
one,
full strength,
take a break, then have your dessert.
Yeah, it's definitely full strength and full bodied. So I mean, you're getting a lot of flavor and a lot of power as well.
Yeah, so I've got to say, I'm really digging it so far, so I'm really curious of what it yields later on as the show progresses.
And speaking of progressing the show, we're kind of taking it back old school a little bit. We've done a few director series episodes. We talked about Quentin. We've talked about Kevin Smith. We figure it's time to bring up another director that's probably one of my favorites in the horror and sci-fi genre, Mr. John Carpenter.
Yep, and we're going to talk about some of the older films, and then progress up further into the timeline, as time goes on. So stay tuned.
This is Jack Burton in the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there. Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes. Just listen to the old Pork Chop Express and take his advice on a dark and stormy night, all right? When some wild-eyed, 8-foot-tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against a barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye, and he asks you if you've paid your dues. Well, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton always says at a time like that. Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's time to talk about the legendary John Carpenter.
Yeah, you know, and prepping for research, I mean, I was very familiar with the Halloween films and even some of his other works like The Thing. And, you know, what I did not realize is, you know, that not only did he produce, but oftentimes, you know, he was in charge of the score for the film and everything of that nature. Yeah, I mean, he touched so many facets of so many films that I never realized that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of rare to see a director who's also the composer of the score to the movie, and you know, also played in some bands that wrote songs for the soundtrack and stuff. I mean, John Carpenter is definitely a multi-talented individual. I mean, for example, you know, we've already talked about Halloween when we did our slasher episode, but Halloween is kind of like one of the movies that you know, has considered to be the start of the whole slasher genre. And speaking of his musical exploits, I mean, the Halloween theme is probably one of the most recognizable horror songs of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost up there, I think, with the Jason Voorhees and the Jaws themes.
Yeah.
Like, those are two that really jump out of my head that, I, you know, really, if you're a horror film or not fan or not, then you hear those themes, you can pretty much identify with.
Yeah, and I've heard that theme mixed into so many, like, sampled for, like, you know, rap songs. So was it,
I mean, Tech N9ne did it with Psycho Bitch.
Tech N9ne Psycho Bitch starts off with the Halloween theme.
Way off timing, way off key. I understand, folks. No need to critique.
Yeah. Go to YouTube. You can find the original version both John Carpenter's and Tech N9ne's. Yeah, I mean, that's really where he started was, I mean, his father was a music teacher, and he originally went to school to learn music before he got into filmmaking. So it's kind of cool that he found a way to put both of his passions together and, you know, deal with the music and the movie aspect. Pretty much he scored every one of his movies except for The Thing. It's about the only one that he did not score the entire film, but he still wrote a few songs for the movie. But it's, yeah, I mean, pretty much any music you've heard in a John Carpenter movie, especially if it's got full of synthesizers from the 80s.
They're very distinct. Like, I mean, like you hear these things and you're like, oh yeah, that's straight up 80s. And I don't know, we kind of fell down some YouTube holes and found like a album that he had.
Yeah, he just recently released it too. I think it's called The Lost Themes. So, I mean, the guy, you know, semi-retired, but he's still not stopping. I mean, he's releasing freaking albums and everything else.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like you said, I just think it's awesome, you know, where so many films that he was a director, producer, writer, composer, and in, you know, some instance, even, you know, acting in his films. You know, I know like the Halloween film, he was the voice of Paul, who was Annie's boyfriend.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
So, I don't know. I mean, it just, once again, you know, one of these very, very talented guys that, you know, I'm sure as his career progresses is going to continue to amaze and will, you know, go down in, you know, really horror film history.
Yeah, and it kind of depends on which fan you're talking to. You know, some people know him as, you know, a prolific horror director with movies like Halloween, The Mouth of Madness, but then he's also a huge sci-fi guy. Yeah, so it depends on, you know, where your nerddom lies, how you know John Carpenter.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the thing, too. Like, you know, this forced me to go back and explore some of his earlier works and things of that nature. And the sci-fi element of a lot of the films is something that I kind of overlooked, you know, that I was not necessarily aware of.
Yeah, and even as, you know, some of his sci-fi mixes in, you know, horror, it's real hard to decide whether, you know, let's start off with The Thing, whether that's a horror movie or a sci-fi movie. Because it definitely has elements of both.
Can it be horrify? Like, is that a thing? Like,
sci-horrors?
Oh, might be onto something there. I mean, you know, I don't know. Panda, don't turn into a fucking alien.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the it's been a long time. And that's another thing with John Carpenter movies. A lot of them, especially his earlier stuff, wasn't exactly commercially successful other than Escape from New York, we'll talk about, and some of the... But, you know, a lot of them, you know, they didn't do too well at start, but are now, like, going back, considered to be cult classics. And, I mean, The Thing is considered one of the best sci-fi movies of all time, you know, nowadays.
Yeah, and as we progress and start talking more about these films, not only are we going to talk about, you know, John Carpenter's legacy and everything of that nature, but, I mean, with these, especially these earlier films, you couldn't have these films without Kurt Russell as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's Kurt Russell owes his career to John Carpenter.
Yes.
He's in so many of, I think at least four, if not more, John Carpenter movies. But yeah, The Thing, I mean, it is a classic sci-fi horror movie. And just, I mean, you see so many, I don't know, elements probably from that, you know, went on to be featured in other movies, like the, just the clock. I mean, it has just bloody, weird, horrific scenes, but also the whole claustrophobia of it all. You know, they're stuck inside a Antarctic research facility with an alien that can perfectly mimic anything it, you know, takes over.
Yeah, so it's always crazy, you know.
You don't know who's the monster. I mean, even like, you know, Kurt Russell is easily the star of the movie, but you don't even know if he's might be the monster or not.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't like, you know, parasites that can assimilate into other organisms. Like, I'm not okay with that.
Yeah.
Which I almost wonder, you know, fast forward quite a few years, but to Men in Black, you know, I kind of wonder if maybe they got some of their ideas from this film and the way that the...
Have you ever seen the movie, was it Phantasm with Ben Affleck?
I think it was Phantasm.
It's the creature in that is very Thing-like. I mean, it's you know, the shapeshifter, and you don't know who's what throughout the movie. It kind of, you know, definitely threw back to this.
You know, we've all played the game Resistance, where you got to figure out who's the spy. Like, can we do one, you know, called, like, Assimilate or something of that nature, and you got to figure out who's the alien life form?
Yeah, that, I mean, the movie starts off so weird, too. That's just all these dudes hanging out in this, you know, ice research facility. Kurt Russell plays MacReady, the helicopter pilot, but also stars a, you know, if you know him from the diabetes commercial, Wilford Brimley as the chief biologist, Blair.
Yeah, and if you don't know Wilford Brimley, please get to know him. I don't think, I mean, God, he was in so many diabetes commercials and things of that
That's
nature.
That's where everybody knows him from now. I mean, but, yeah,
but, you know, all
he's
the,
a great actor as well.
Talking about falling down a YouTube hole, YouTube Wilford Brimley, you'll be stuck for days. Like, with all different, you know, Beatus remixes and stuff of that nature. Like, oh, yeah, it's insane.
Have you ever seen Wilford Brimley Cat?
Yes.
But, yeah, and also, was it Keith David, I believe is his name, who played, I can't remember his name in this movie, Childs. That guy has been in just about every weird sci-fi movie. I mean, he's been in a bunch of John Carpenter stuff, but even today, you watch some kind of low-budget horror movie, dude's going to be in it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's you know, it's awesome to go back and find the foundation of where a lot of these folks, you know, got their careers started and everything of that nature. And yeah, I think it's awesome. I don't know. I didn't realize, you know, we were talking about earlier, you know, the claustrophobia aspect and, you know, being stuck in the research facility. I didn't realize that, you know, both of the facilities were actually the same one.
Yeah, if you, because once, I mean, it starts with these Norwegians in a helicopter chasing a dog trying to kill it for some reason. We don't know why. So when they kind of crash and die, Kurt Russell and one of the scientists goes to their facility to try to figure out what happened to him. And the facility's all burned up and blown up because some bad shit has has happened. And there is a sequel to thing that, or a prequel that came out in 2011 where they show what happened at that base before the events of Kurt Russell's team. But it looked, I was like, this base looks oddly familiar. And what happened was in the final scenes of the movie, Kurt Russell tries to blow up the base to kill the alien, because if it gets out, since it can mimic anything, it could take over the whole world. So they just blow up the whole base and burn it down. Well, in the filming of the movie, they filmed all the scenes at the Norwegian base after they filmed them blowing up the American base. So the burned out Norwegian base is actually the American base after they blew it up.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting, because I'm like you. I looked at it and I'm like, wait, this is strangely familiar for some reason. Why is that? And you know, research prevailed.
But yeah, and as we turns out the Norwegians dug up a spaceship with this alien parasite that can take over anything, and they were trying to kill the dog, because that was like what it last was. And that first scene where because at the start of the movie, you don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, you just think these people are trying to kill this dog for whatever reason.
And the dog's just kind of chilling, staring at people creepily occasionally. But when they finally put it in pen with
Malamute. Yeah, I mean, it's almost has that infamous, like, it doesn't matter if you, like, there's no facial change.
No, they're just going to stare at you like, what up? Yeah, but when they finally put that thing by itself with the other dogs, it turns into the thing and starts trying to eat the other dogs. But yeah, that first scene where its face just peels open down to the bone and, like, starts squirting at, like, fucking spider legs and tentacles and that is just, will give you nightmares.
Yeah, I mean, I had forgotten how creepy this film is. Like, I can remember being much younger and, you know, my aunt putting this film on VHS and us watching it, things of that nature. And it was, I don't know, it was always one, never really gave me nightmares, but I always thought it was creepy as hell.
And isn't that what Craig T. Nelson is watching in Poltergeist? At the beginning, when he falls on the couch.
I think it is the thing that he's watching, yes.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, this movie's like, even when I rewatched it the other day for research purposes, I almost had to like kick my roommate's ass. I thought he was an alien because I like walked out of my bedroom to go to work and he's like standing in the hallway with his like using his cell phone as a camera because he doesn't want to turn the lights on for some dumbass reason. I was like, it's fucking aliens. It scared the shit out of me.
Not saying it's aliens, but it's probably aliens. Or maybe just a roommate holding the cell phone. Not yeah, sure, I mean, but you see the bright light and a, you know, undistinguishable figure. Like, I mean,
it's a good thing I wasn't carrying my gun that morning. That's all I'm saying. It's like, it's the damn robot aliens.
I mean, maybe not a robot, but I don't know. I thought it was crazy, too. You know, the test and stuff like that the scientists are trying to perform, too.
Oh, yeah. I about jumped out of my seat when he puts the needle to the blood and it jumps out of the petri dish. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. That's not normal.
Or when the one guy has a heart attack and they go to hit him with the paddles and the stomach just opens up in a big mouth and bites the hands off the doctor. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, shit just got real.
And then when he torches him and his head falls off and turns into like a spider, that was creepy as fuck.
I don't know. I think Doom might have taken some pointers from this film.
Like, yeah.
Just in some of the ways that the monsters and shit like that move and, you know, can transform and all kinds of weird shit. But yeah, I forgot, you know, how creepy of a film this was.
Yeah, and the, I mean, the makeup effects, too, are just, I mean, they're insane. I mean, it still holds up today.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. Like, I'm watching these films, and I mean, you know what? This film's been out since, what, 82 or something of that nature? Yeah, so
wasn't a big CGI time.
No, I mean, you're using practical effects.
Practical effects and models and stuff. And
so, I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things that I think I'm appreciating so much as we go back and, you know, re-explore some of the films and director's history and things of that nature is, you know, we wind the clock and then fast forward and you're like, holy shit, you know, I mean, this is where people got their foundation, their building blocks, and, you know, things still hold up.
Let me ask you your opinion on this, because at one point in the movie, Wilford Brimley's character kind of goes crazy when he figures out what's going on and is trying to stop them from leaving, destroying the radio and the plane and all that stuff, and they lock him in the tool shed. Was he an alien then? or did he become an alien later? Because later on in the movie, you find out that while he's been locked up in the shack, he's dug out a hole and is building a spaceship to try to escape. But was he an alien from the beginning, or did the alien get him at some point? I mean, was he an alien trying to get put away so he could work on the ship, or did the alien come get him later?
I think he might have been an alien all along.
That's the
thing. I don't know.
I go back and forth on that, because for one, I'm like, all right, he needed to be by himself where he could work. So freaking out and getting put in the shed, you know, works with that. But he couldn't have known that's what would happen to him. And you know, at first, he's all like batshit crazy. And then they go out there later to check on him. He's calmed down again. He's like, I really want to come inside. You know, I'm better now. So I'm like, I don't know if the alien took him over and took advantage of his isolation, or if he was an alien from the start.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, that's kind of an interesting, you know, scenario. I mean, I hadn't really questioned that.
Yeah.
I'm like, it can kind of go either way. I mean, there's no...
If he was an alien from the start, like I said, he doesn't know they're going to lock him up. But, I mean, why would... If he was the alien, why would he, you know, be... drawing attention to himself, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
alien wants people to come and find them so he can escape.
But, I mean, at the same time, like, if you're, you know, somebody that's able to assimilate, I mean, you prey on people's weaknesses and their vulnerabilities, and, you know, what better way to ultimately kind of blend in, you know, than to have a little bit of an episode that people would be like, oh, well... guy's just batshit crazy, so, you know, let's just separate him from the group and, you know, maybe not draw further suspicion.
And how about, like, when they go to check on him, he's got, like, a noose hanging there. Like, he's... That's one of the reasons I'm saying he wasn't an alien to begin with, because he was trying to kill himself to stop from, you know, becoming an alien puppet, but apparently he abandoned that at some point. So that's what I'm saying. I don't think he was an alien to begin with.
I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, that's a very valid argument. I mean, but then again, you know, if you hang yourself, like, that's not necessarily going to kill the life form. The life form's just going to be like, oh, need another fucking shell, so I'm going to move on.
But then again, it prevents him from becoming the shell if he had, but true. Really, something might have got to him first.
What a quandary.
Yeah, it's a mind fuck. All
right, quick, let's tweet John Carpenter, see what he's got to say about that shit.
He's like, it was 82, I don't remember that shit.
Nah, man, like, people always remember that shit.
That's like one of the things he's credited with, the whole morality story of horror movies, saying, you know, if you have sex, you die in a movies and stuff like that. And he's said, like, no, that was not my intention. Like, my intention was to write these characters like, you know, real teenagers at the time, not to make it some big stance on morality.
I mean, but that's, you know, that's always a funny, you know, kind of argument that you can draw from a lot of the slasher film genre and a lot of horror films just in general. I mean, you know, oftentimes, you know, it's out of teenage stupidity. Yeah, I'm going to get laid, but we got to go to this abandoned building that nobody's been into, that some serial killers probably resided in.
Yeah, and like I said, this movie spun off a prequel and a like very popular video game. The Thing video game was pretty badass, and it took place right after the end of the Thing movie.
I guess I'm slacking, because I didn't realize there was a game nor the prequel.
Yeah, it was like PS2. I didn't realize that there was a prequel came out until I was doing the research. But yeah, apparently it came out in 2011. And Carpenter has said that he has written a script for a sequel if you know, they ever get around to making it, that takes place with, you know, Kurt Russell's and Child's. That's another thing, too. Kurt Russell, after he blows everything up, Child shows up and he's like, yeah, I just got lost in the storm because I thought I saw Blair and went after him. So at this point, you don't know if, you know, pretty sure Kurt's not infected, but you don't know if Child's infected. And Kurt's pretty much just like, you know, if either one of us is the alien, I'm too tired to deal with it. Let's just, you know, sit here, have a drink and wait to die.
Just fuck it. Well, what are you going to do? Drink your problems away.
Yep. So I'm out of dynamite and gas for my flamethrower. So if you're an alien, fuck it. You've won. Let's just have a drink and wait to freeze to death.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of get that opinion, you know, not only in this film, but Big Trouble, Little China. Like, Kurt Russell kind of always has a little bit of that fuck it mentality, let whatever happens, happens, and just go with the flow.
Like old Jack Burton, he used to always say, fuck it.
Well, I guess that's a good segue. Speaking of Jack Burton, let's switch gears.
1986's Big Trouble in Little China. And it's probably one of my favorite movies from the 80s.
I mean, it is almost the epitome of everything 80s. Yep. I mean, dude, what do you've got your ninjas, you've got, you know, the whole trucker get up. I mean, I almost kind of felt like a little throwback to Smokey and the Bandit.
That's thing too, like you see Jack in his truck, the Pork Job Express. You know, talking to people on the CB. I mean, dude was podcasting like before people were podcasting. You know, there was no iTunes back then. He just talked, you know, talk shit on a CB. That's like proto podcasting right there.
I mean, I can remember, you know, hell, I don't know, maybe 10 years old, and you know, some of my parents' buddies set a, you know, big CB radio system, you know, downstairs in the basement. I mean, they would be fucking. I mean, you would listen to some of the channels, and I mean, you had truckers reading books or, you know, telling stories. Like, I mean, that's kind of like, I don't know, a history of podcasts in a way. I mean, like, what are you going to do? You're going to listen to the radio that's going to play the same, you know, 10 songs day in and day out, but, you know, fuck it. Got to tell some life stories, switch it up a little bit. You know, yeah, I mean, that's good counseling.
Yeah, I mean, and this movie, too, it was probably the closest you get to a kung fu movie set in, you know, America, because it's a, you know, Chinatown in San Francisco, so it looks very, very Chinese, but yeah, Kurt Russell's character is Jack Burton, the truck driver, kind of forced to be a hero. I mean, and also featuring what's his name, Wang Chi, who plays the guy who plays Lo Pan, James Hong. That guy has been in every freaking movie. I mean, he was in RIPD as Ryan Reynolds' character looked like when he was. Yes. And I think he's been in like Kung Fu and like a bunch of movies playing, you know, the evil David Lo Pan, who is this ancient Chinese demon who's trying to resurrect himself by kidnapping green-eyed girls and marrying them. And
green-eyed Chinese girls at that. Like, yeah. Apparently it's such a rarity. I don't know.
I guess this was pre-contacts.
Yeah,
I think I've seen a few nowadays.
Colored contacts, man. I mean, you don't have the powers. You got to be born with the powers.
And also, the three elements or whatever, the three storms or whatever. But yeah, they had the guy that that controlled wind, the guy that controlled lightning, and then what was the other guy's power?
Yeah, there was thunder, rain, and lightning.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and freaking lightning looks straight up like Raiden. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Mortal Kombat came out after this, but they definitely like ripped off Big Trouble when they designed the character Raiden.
I mean, I absolutely felt like that was a throw to Mortal Kombat. Like, I definitely see where they got that from. I mean, pointy hat. I mean, which, I don't know. Raiden's hat did sit a little higher on his head so he could see, like, the God of Lightning and this. Like, I'm like, dude, you can't even see through the brim of your hat. Like, no wonder you can't hit shit. And
yeah,
you're
that's
just
why they
like,
were, very loosely made so you could see through them. And also, Egg Shin, which is the local magician who helps Jack and them, played by Victor Wong, who is himself a famous actor. I mean, he was in probably my favorite Eddie Murphy movies, The Golden Child. I mean, he always plays like this weird Chinese wise man. It's just kind of crazy.
I don't know. Almost gave me a throwback to like The Monkey's Paw or something of that nature when like he makes his appearance.
It's a seven demon bag.
Damn.
I mean, everyone needs a the seven or six demon bag or whatever it was, and whatever that drink was, he gave them all to give them powers.
Oh, dude, that shit just looked disgusting.
But yeah, just all the, I mean, it's funny because everyone there is like, you know, yeah, we're down with this mystical stuff. We're not going to question it. And Kurt Russell is just like, all right, I'm a reasonable guy, but I've seen a lot of unreasonable shit. Like, what the hell is going on? Like, the one thing, they get like attacked by some kind of monster, and Egg Shen throws like a smoke grenade or something. And he's like, he will come out no more. And he's like, what will come out no more? What the fuck was that?
I mean, that's the thing, man. Like, you're just in your truck cruising through the alleyways, and all of a sudden, like, you end up in the middle of this big-ass samurai battle just to have these three badass gods show up. Like, what do you do with that? And then not to mention, you're a trucker, and you lose your truck. Like, yeah. Dude, I'm sorry. That's, you know, that's like a man losing his dog.
I mean, yeah, they can kidnap his girl. That don't bother me. You kidnap his truck. He's coming for you.
I don't know. I just love the, you know, all of the, I mean, it was so the 80s. Yeah. I mean, everything about this film, every cliche that you could mention, I think this film had it.
Yeah, and a young hot Kim Cattrall is Gracie Law, the lawyer who's trying to get evidence on Lopan and ends up getting in trouble as they all do.
Damsel in distress.
Yeah, for an 80s action movie, you got to have the damsel to get kidnapped, or it's not a, you know, 80s action movie.
Yeah, I mean the action sequences in this film and everything. I mean, I really dig it. I mean, I find myself this is a film I watch, you know, every couple of years. I mean, you know, just it's funny, it's lighthearted.
And yeah, I mean, it's currently on Netflix too, so. Yeah, it's one that always I go helps. Back to every once in a while. And just his quotes, talking about himself in the third person half the time. You know, what old Jack Burton always says. Yes.
And it's funny because if you listen to some of Jack Burton's quotes on YouTube from the Pork Chop Express, the next videos that play will teach you how to fry pork chops.
Yeah, you get a weird Google metric when you start looking for Pork Chop Express. Yeah, it's like Smokey and the Bandit with demons.
If
that could have been a weird Smokey and the Bandit spinoff with a snowman.
I mean, you basically have, you know, the three storms, you know, basically, you know, you got the sheriff's son, and. Man, I need to watch Smokey and the Bandit again. Like, I'm forgetting people's names, and that's bad.
We can talk about that when we do our road trip episode.
Oh, shit, yes.
But yeah, the...
spoilers!
and I like when Kurt Russell's fighting Lopad, and he's trying to be a badass, and, like, tries to throw a knife at him, and he just misses. And he's like, crap. So then, like, freaking Lopan throws the knife back at him, and all of a sudden he, like, catches it, throws it back, and hits him on the second try. It's all in the reflexes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. I mean, some of the action is just so over the top too that I mean, it's just funny.
Just remember, if you're going to Chinatown, bring your six demon bag.
Yes. I got a six-sided die. Does that work?
That might be in the bag. That's probably okay. one of the totems.
One of the items. Yeah,
that goes into the bag. Oh. So while we're in the 80s. Let's talk about, because we already talked about two Kurt Russell movies, so let's give Kurt a break for a second and talk about They Live.
Oh, shit. I forgot all about that film.
1988.
I was so confused by
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah. This film, for some reason, confused the hell out of me. Like, I think I, you know, freaking passed out or something like a quarter of the way and like woke up about halfway through the film, and I never could figure out exactly what the hell was happening. Like at first, like I felt like you know, just a bunch of people you know, living in the slums or homeless, and then, you know, the government's basically imposing on, like, I'm almost like thinking it's some kind of like documentary or type thing, like, you know.
Well, basically instead of the government, well, they control the government at this point. Aliens at some point have invaded the Earth and no one realizes it because they're basically using subliminal messages to keep everyone asleep pretty much. You know, everyone like sees the world as it.
Dude.
What?
I'm thinking, I fell asleep. The messaging has fucked with my brain. They could got be, to me.
You need some sunglasses. But yeah, basically they're using this broadcast to keep everybody kind of hypnotized, believing the aliens are humans and, you know, controlling them. And there's a kind of a group of resistance people that have made these sunglasses that basically let you see through the spell. So Roddy Piper finds one of these sunglasses and puts them on. All of a sudden he's like awake to the fact that, oh shit, aliens have invaded. Because when you see the aliens, you see them as they are, and they look like weird, skinless skeleton people.
It's a precursor to Terminator.
And basically, every like magazine like you pick up has like messages like, you know, consume, you know, be, you know, submit, yeah. And even like he looks at like some money, and on the money it's just like a white piece of paper says, "This is your god," and it's almost. You could almost make this movie today. I mean, it's definitely got those overtones of, you know, the government is trying to, you know, make you submissive. And, you know, this could almost be a modern day conspiracy movie.
So do you think it's almost I mean, this came out 1984, you know, yeah. George Orwell. Like, I mean, I very much had some of those similar thoughts and everything.
Yeah, it definitely came out of a time of government paranoia, but I think we've kind of, as history repeats itself, gone back to that, where people don't really trust the government anymore. And like I said, you could probably remake this movie today and it still be the, you know, just as impactful as the story was to begin with. But other than that, it is a weird fucking movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a doozy. I mean,
I mean, everyone knows the famous line, "I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of bubblegum." Like, this is where it came from. that quote came from this movie. And it's funny because...
There's one less quote you can use for the closing of the show, my friend.
Yeah, I don't even know what I use. But before he, you know, wakes up, he's very, I don't know, articulate. But then once he finds the glasses... Just about everything he says is some kind of like smart ass one line. It's just like you see someone like alien lady like buying makeup or something. He's like, "Lady, that's like putting perfume on a pig. It ain't gonna make it gonna help." Or just, he goes, "Y'all are real ugly."
I don't know. I've seen a lot of films with a lot of great one liners, but I mean, this one almost takes the cake.
Yeah, I mean, like his through the second half of the movie, his. Basically speaks in one-liners. And then that fight scene with him.
Like
and,
I'm almost almost feeling like almost Bruce Campbell-ish.
And then like later on, that fight scene with him and Keith David where he's trying to show him the aliens. And he's like, "You know, I just want to do my thing. I don't want to get involved." And he literally has to beat the shit out of each other to finally get him to try on the glasses and take a look around at the world. But it's like the most, I mean, it goes on forever.
Oh, yeah, dude, that scene was
it's
like...
It's one of the most brutal fights for two guys that are trying to save each other.
What, I'm trying to think, like, what's another film that, you know, that kind of compares to? But, I mean, that one scene just like...
I mean, it just goes on forever. And then afterward, they decide to go get a hotel room or something like that, and they're all just like the crap beat out of them. It's like, "Yeah, all right, you saved my life, buddy, but like you just beat the shit out of me." And it's like both of them, like they beat each other to a standstill where neither one of them got out of the fight, you know, unscathed. They're both just jacked up.
We're just going to call this a draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like there was a lot of gunplay in this film too that I liked and stuff of that nature too. So
yeah, because once he figures out that there's aliens everywhere, he just kind of goes on a rampage, starts killing like everyone he sees that's an alien. And there's even like you know humans that have you know gone to the dark side and you know sold out to the aliens, and basically all the you know one percenters are either aliens or alien sympathizers. And it's like yeah, I mean it's like I said, it's something you could probably get away with you know doing today.
Yeah, I think this film, you know, set in a modern time. I don't know. Could we have a sequel to They Live?
They live again. Or they still live.
They still live.
And the way they do it too, whenever he puts on the glasses, like the fictional world is all color, but when they put on the glasses and see the real world, it's all black and white. And like I said, everything, all the advertisements and subliminal messages, and you can see who's the aliens. You know, the aliens have literally joined in with the humans, so they're at the grocery store getting groceries and whatnot. But that too. And did you notice the aliens' communicators? They were the freaking PKE meters from Ghostbusters.
Yes, I saw that. I thought that was awesome.
Somebody recycled some props. I had to go look and see if this movie came out before Ghostbusters, but now Ghostbusters was first, so they definitely stole the prop from Ghostbusters.
I mean, why reinvent the wheel, man? I mean, use what's made available to you. That's kind of being resourceful. No need to reinvent these things. Like, hey, you got some of those left over at the studio? Great. Can you send them my way? I got something in the works.
I need something that looks kind of alien. And they didn't have cell phones back then, so they needed some device to to talk. There was no alien iPhones. It's all wrist communicators and PKE meters.
Shit that I still wish we had today. Like, it's so funny watching so many of these movies that are set in the future, and the future now being the past. It's like, set in the future in 1997, and I'm like, there was none of this shit.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. That's what makes it so weird watching some of these old sci-fi movies. But yeah, and when they finally destroy the signal, and everyone wakes up, and the aliens are all like there amongst us, and people are like, and the aliens don't realize what's going on at first. These guys sitting there at a bar having a beer, and everyone's looking at him like, the fuck happened to this guy? And like the girl having sex with a dude, she looks down and he's an alien. He's like, what's up, babe? It's like, just so weird.
I see you for what you truly are now, and gross. I don't like it.
But yeah, speaking of the future that is now the past, 1981's Escape from New York. Probably one of the best sci-fi movie. I mean, it's probably one of the highest rated sci-fi movies. It makes everyone's top 50 to top 10 list. But yeah, it's supposedly 1997. It's the future where crime has increased by 400%, and they've turned New York into a prison island.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically like, what, Manhattan Island, New York City.
Yeah, the island of Manhattan has become a prison, and the president plane has crashed in the middle of it. So they go to a criminal ex-Special Forces
Snake
Plissken.
Yeah, and the whole time, like, they kept saying Snake. Like, in my head, I'm like, Metal Gear Solid? Like, that's just what I felt like. I was like, oh, shit, throwback to NES.
And I got to say, as a guy who's, decided to grow a beard, Kurt Russell's beard and The Thing and is on point. Yeah, it's a good beard inspiration. Yeah, and even in Escape from New York, he's kind of rocking the sweet facial hair.
Yeah, and in doing the research, I actually found out that Carpenter wrote this film in the mid '70s as kind of like a reaction to the whole Watergate scandal. Which, really? I thought it was cool just to tie it into an actual, government, scandal. So, I don't know. I thought that was cool. A little tidbit.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole, too, the Duke of New York, freaking Isaac Hayes. Yes. Oh, and Donald Pleasant from, which, was in Halloween as the president.
Which was odd. Like, seeing these films, like, all right, we had the success of Halloween and everything of that nature. Now we see the dude as a president. Like, seeing, all these characters are, actors getting recycled into different roles. I'm like,
yeah, John Carpenter has like a stable of guys he likes to work with. You see them show up in like every movie, like the Brain, who's basically the lone scientist in
Harry
New York,
Stanton.
Who basically makes gas and does all the scientific stuff for his girlfriend in the movie was actually the voice of the chess computer in The Thing.
I don't know. Like, Jamie Lee Curtis, she uncredited, but, you know, was basically, you know, the, you know, preface narrator. Which I thought it was...
I didn't realize that either.
Because you had so many of these actors return after the success of Halloween, you know, for this film, that I just thought that was awesome.
And then I think, too, that scene where basically, like, there's a few people that have gone, like, completely animalistic and are basically living in the sewers and the subways, and they come out at night to hunt and basically kill people for food. You know, they're kind of like these weird cannibals. But that whole sequence could almost be John Carpenter's version of a zombie movie. I mean, we're, you know, Kurt's trying to, like, hide out in the diner, and the dudes start busting up through the floor, and yeah, like I said, it could definitely fall under the zombie category if they did could almost do a whole movie of those guys.
Yeah, no, I definitely could see that. I don't know, like, a John Carpenter zombie movie, what would that look like?
I don't know.
Like, I mean, you know, we have George Romero, you know, the god of zombie films and everything of that nature. I don't know. You couldn't really consider... I don't consider Michael Myers very zombie-esque, because headshots don't kill the fucker. I don't know what a... I don't know. Like, we'll get into it later. Like, I know Johns did, you know, vampires and shit like that, but zombies? I don't know.
Yeah.
Tangent. I digress.
Yeah, Snake Plissken. I like the Duke's car, too. Like, the Cadillac with the chandeliers. Dude, and a disco ball in the back.
I mean, it's
some serious
the ultimate pitmobile.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Like, fucking move over, shag carpet. We got disco balls and shit in this thing.
And Ernest Borgnine is the cabbie.
Yes.
It's great Ernest Borgnine.
Which?
My favorite role is still is Dom Santini in Airwolf.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, when it comes to this film, I mean, it was a hell of a ride. I don't know. Snake's just an absolute badass, too. I guess that's one reason I enjoyed it. Like, you just see Kurt Russell balls through the wall.
Yeah, and him was his... Yeah, you know, they always outfit him with, like, all kind of badass gear, and he ends up losing half of it once he gets into New York.
It's like, fuck.
And I like the restaurant he hides in, too. Like, when all the crazies start coming out of the woodworks, the name of the restaurant is Chock Full of Nuts.
Yes.
kind of fitting place to be with the crazies running around.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really enjoyed this film.
And the whole, like, gladiator battle, like, with the boxing ring set up, and they're, like, using baseball bats and garbage can lids as shields and...
Dude, where do you think ECW got its start?
Like, yeah, it did kind of look like some weird backyard wrestling. Like,
I mean, you know, this would have been a great one for you know, Piper to take an appearance in. Like,
and I feel like that big guy that he's fighting, I feel like I've seen him in, like, several other movies as the big bad gladiator guy.
I don't know. That was a very pivotal scene. I enjoyed the hell out of that. That's just like some fucking street ball.
Yeah, and I like it, the whole thing that he has to find the president within 22 hours because the president has to speak at some kind of, you know, big summit or something. And he has this tape that's basically, it's like some kind of, like, you know, describing some kind of weapon of mass destruction from what it sounds like. So he's basically just going to threaten all these other countries that we're at war with. So Snake switches the tapes on him, so when he's like, you know, listen to this, and it starts playing some, like, old music. And Snake's just walking off, you know, tearing the tape up, like, haha, screw you. Yes. And then later on, we got the sequel, Escape from L.A.
And I gotta say, man, like, Escape from New York, watchable, enjoyable. This film... I was just like, this film did not need to happen.
Yes. Like, oh, yeah, I do like sequels instead of remakes, but this one, I don't know how something shot in the 90s looked worse than something shot in 1981. I mean, it had some of the worst CGI effects.
Well, and maybe, you know, this was because maybe, I don't know, I mean, co-written and co-scored by John Carpenter, but it was really, you know, co-written and produced by Deborah Hill and Kurt Russell. But
the effects in it just looked like shit.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to, you know, get behind this film. I mean, even with Steve Buscemi and Bruce Campbell, like, it had potential with the cast lineup, but just nothing seemed to fall in place. Like, Escape from New York, it was chronological, it made sense, it was enjoyable to watch. This was just like, what the fuck happened?
But then again, it's like a storyline that could almost be redone now, where it's like the, instead of it being in the 80s one, it was like an ultra fascist version of the government, and this one it's like an ultra religious, like right wing version of the government has taken over, and pretty much you can get deported to the island of LA because LA has fallen off into the ocean for any kind of moral crime.
Damn global warming.
But yeah, it had potential, but yeah, the effects just does not hold up. And then Bruce Campbell's character as the Surgeon General of LA, where instead of the crazies that live in the sewer now, it's people that, basically all these people that have had too much plastic surgery now, their plastic surgery is falling apart, so the only way they can live is to keep harvesting new parts from people.
You know what? Sounds
I can
like
see a, that happening.
You know what? That's very much sounds like another film, something called Repo the Genetic Opera.
I could see that happening in a post-apocalyptic LA. I mean, it's just so weird. Oh, and Bruce Campbell, like, his face is just jacked up. It's so freaky.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, this film was just...
It's like a series of sketches. It's like, there's not like an overall story arc to it nearly. It's just these weird set pieces here and there. Yeah, I mean, he's still badass, but yeah, it's just the movie itself is just kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It just...
And instead of like a badass gladiatory fight, it's Kurt Russell playing basketball as the the big you know, execution scene with Jose Cuervo or whatever his name was. Cuervo Jones, or fuck, I don't remember his name now, the big bad guy. That's how much I enjoyed this movie. I don't remember what the bad guy's name was.
Yeah, it was... Cuervo Jones.
Yeah, I knew it was Cuervo something.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to digress. Like, I didn't enjoy this film. I couldn't get behind it. I don't have anything to say, so I'm not going to say anything at all, damn it. Like, I respect John Carpenter and all, so I guess I'm not going to bash the thing too heavily, but yeah, it was just a clusterfuck from the very beginning that I couldn't enjoy.
Oh, but I'll tell you, another one that, that, and more modern John Carpenter is John Carpenter's Vampires.
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed opinions on this film.
It's not a great movie, but it's worth watching. It's an amusing movie.
I'll give it amusing. I won't give it great.
I mean, John Woods as... the leader of a team of vampire hunters that work for the, apparently the Catholic Church knows monsters are real, and they have a team of hunters that hunt down vampires and whatnot. And John Woods in this thing is just so weird. Or James Woods.
Yeah, it, I don't know. It's weird. Like, the whole Vatican vampire sponsored, like, I don't know.
I'm not gonna see that happening. That there's some kind of secret. That, you know, monsters are real, and the church is secretly fighting some kind of war that we don't know about.
I think they call that good versus evil. I'm not sure, but you know, opposing forces at work—that could be a thing.
I didn't like the because it's funny. They go out and kill vampires, and they have like a big ass party, and they have like a priest with them that's supposed to, I guess, be their guide or you know their, but. Pretty much all of his team gets wiped out except for him and like maybe you know one or two other guys, and their priest gets killed, so they get this new rookie priest that's like, you know, first time out in the fighting evil and stuff, and he's giving him so much shit because this guy is like total hardcore religious and stuff, and he's like, so, you know, killing that vampire, did it, you know, give you wood? And he's like, what? And he's like, you know, mahogany, oak, teak. Just keeps like giving the dude shit, trying to embarrass him.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I love stuff like that, though. I mean, you know, the comedic aspect, I thought was awesome.
And it did spawn a sequel that he did not direct, but he produced Vampires Los Muertes, which was about Mexican vampires, starring John Bon Jovi as a vampire hunter.
Yeah, that's
one to see just for the comedic element of Bon Jovi being a badass vampire hunter. Which I like. He drives like a freaking Jeep Wrangler around with a surfboard on the roof, and the surfboard like opens up, and it's got all this vampire hunting equipment like hidden in the surfboard.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was fun to watch, I suppose, is the right word. Once again, I'm not going to say this is a great film, but it is, you know, kind of a must-see just from that aspect of.
I mean, it's so bad. There's one scene where it has the guy who played Eddie Winslow on.
Family Matters.
Family Matters is one of his Bon Jovi's vampire hunting team, and he ends up getting bit because he meets some like hot chick, and she's like gonna give him head, but turns out she's a vampire and she bites him while she's going down on him. It's the most ridiculous concept for a movie.
But if it's gonna happen, you know that's how it's gonna happen.
But I mean, going back. John Carpenter also directed Christine, the famous Stephen King movie about a haunted car.
Yeah, I enjoyed Christine.
I mean, you have a model of it on the wall.
I got a model. Yeah, I mean, that's back when I was on my movie car kick. And I don't know, Christine is, you know, in my opinion, still kind of one of those films that holds up. It's, you know, very interesting from the aspect of... you know, just the fact that the car is possessed, and you know what? You fuck with the car, you're going to die.
It also has Harry Dean Stanton in it, who shows up in a bunch of other movies. Yeah, it was a Plymouth Fury, was what Christine was. A 1956 Plymouth Fury.
Yeah, I really, I don't know. I mean, it was, I didn't realize Carpenter directed it up until we started doing the research and everything. But, I mean, just from the sheer fact of, you know, you're getting bullied or whatever, like, the car's going to take its vengeance. Fucking destroy the car, guess what? It's going to destroy your life.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of weird. I mean, it's, we've seen plenty of movies where the car is a hero, Knight Rider and whatnot. But, yeah, a car possessed by evil. An interesting concept.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I kind of like the aspect of the whole DIY thing, because I mean, the entire time, you know, freaking, who is it? Arnold Cunningham, Keith Gordon, is the teen of the owner and everything, but basically goes through and rebuilds Christine from the ground up.
And Carpenter said that he really didn't plan on directing this movie, but basically the thing, like I said, it now is a classic, but at that point, you know, kind of was a critical and box office failure. So he just kind of took Christine as a job because that was really all that was offered to him at the time. And then now it's considered a classic horror movie.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, this is kind of another one of those throwbacks. You know, one of the scenes that stands out in my mind is, you know, basically when they're at the drive-in movie theater and, you know, Leah basically tells Arnie that she's uncomfortable with the car the whole nine yards and, you know, basically, you know, bolts off and everything of that nature. And
it's weird, too, because in the novel version, the car is possessed by... the spirit of its previous owner, but in the movie it's kind of shown as being evil from the minute it came off the assembly line, so they really don't explain like how a car got possessed by evil, but still it's a badass movie.
Yeah, this one, I mean, it starts out, you know, in the, you know, basically the assembly plant, rather, and like the worker like is looking under the hood, and you know, the hood closes and ends up injuring the man's hand. And then, you know, another worker's killed when basically the car locks him in and he dies from the exhaust fumes. So, but it never explains, you know, how the car became possessed. You just know that.
Yeah, it's just possessed.
Yeah. Bad shit happens around this car. Like,
I mean, yeah.
Christine's wheel fell off the other day. Like,
it was a Plymouth, yeah. That's, that's the only explanation you need.
Damn.
So as we kind of wrap this up, what's, you know, some highlights to the John Carpenter list? Anything stands out as your favorite?
Big Trouble, Little China, and the Halloween films, I think, are my standouts. And, you know, as and The Thing. I mean, the Thing is another one that has its place in time, everything of that nature, that from the more sci-fi aspect of Carpenter that I really didn't realize. You know, I mean, there was some stuff produced or, you know, that he worked on in the 60s and 70s that to this day I haven't watched yet that, you know, hint more on the sci-fi thing. So,
yeah, I mean, out of all of me, like I said, Halloween's always a big one, but Big Trouble in Little Town is one that I rewatch every so often. And it's just, you know, I don't even consider that one like a, you know, it's more of a comedy with.
I would say action comedy is how I view it.
I mean, it's like I said, it's a great movie. And then, like I said, the Thing is, it still holds up. It's still creepy as shit today. I mean, the effects on it still look amazing. And when you go back and look at some horror movies from the 80s, and the special effects are just god awful. But I mean, this one still is just creepy as shit.
And, and you strike up a movie or a you know, conversation with people that are big into horror films, things of that nature, and talk about The Thing. I mean, everybody generally has a creep out moment from that film.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of films today, you know, you see that whole paranoia, claustrophobic elements, but this one really paid it off with adding the actual, you know, sometimes you don't get to see the monster. With this one, you know, the monster pops up when you least expect it and is just horrific. So it's like these moments of claustrophobia and paranoia peppered with these horrific scenes, and then back to like, oh shit, who's next? And I always expect to be the dog guy, the freaking dog trainer. I was like, that dude is freaking possessed. No, he's just weird.
Yeah.
He was not an alien.
Clark. It's not Clark.
He was just freaking weird. So as we wrap up, what's your final thoughts on this cigar?
You know, definitely once I got into the halfway point of the cigar, you know, I'm definitely getting a lot more of the spice that has become much more prevalent to me in the cigar. You know, I don't know, at first, like the spice was subtle, but then it intensifies and then it kind of backs off a little bit again. It's kind of a weird progression, and the flavors, you know, they kind of flip flop. I mean,
you know, very earthy, you know, kind of grassiness, but yeah, it's got a lot of flavor, and that strength character just kind of, you know, builds up toward the middle of the cigar and then kind of slacks off as you go, but the flavor profile kind of stays with you throughout.
I don't know. Like I'm a little bit conflicted. Like I think my initial saying that, oh, this is definitely full bodied, like it kind of mellowed out and become a little bit more of a medium cigar as the spicy notes took the back burner.
Yeah, definitely toward the middle of the cigar, it's got a lot more strength than here at the end. But kind of like a movie. Yeah. You build up, you get your climax, and then you got your resolution at the end. It's kind of.
It's almost like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a very enjoyable cigar, very budget friendly smoke, and probably one that I'm going to continue smoking now that I've tried this one.
And the part of this release, too, is it's supposed to be only available in fine tobacco retailers. Like I said, they released this one and the 1845 Oscuro that was going to be primarily a internet retailer item, with this being mainly a brick and mortar item. So it's kind of cool that but I've seen the Oscuro in stores as well. So like I said, if you can find one, pick it up. I want to try the Oscuro version now that I've tried this one, because I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So I mean, this is a great gateway into the Portegas. What? Did I butcher Partagas. It again? Partagas. Whatever.
Portagas.
Fuck. I mean, who's keeping tabs on this shit anyway?
Just because I don't want to get the angry tweets later. Y'all mispronounce that cigar. Y'all suck.
We do suck. We're aware of that. Pronunciation is not my strong suit.
Oh, and with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
It's cold outside. I've been running for miles. Helicopter trailing behind. Hey, it's a camp thing. I'll stay for a while. Won't you help a doggy out of a bind? There's nothing to see here. I'm only a husky. Your average adorable rover. But once I convince you it's okay to trust me, your civilization is over. I can't wait to see their faces when I spring. Yes, sir. 'Cause they think that I'm a dog, but I'm the thing. I'm the thing, baby.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's Beer 30.
Yeah.
So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
So we're drinking something from the Homebrew Mart. This is by Ballast Point. We're doing the Homework Series, Batch 6, the Robust Porter. And since we've, you know, over the last year have gotten pretty big into homebrewing, one of the cool things that I found with this beer is that it comes with a recipe to brew the beer.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. This series of beers is kind of a throwback to their homebrew origins, and Ballast Point actually has a homebrew company called Homebrew Mart where you can get your beer supplies. But yeah, each one of these beers comes with a little tab on it that has the recipe for the beer. So if you drink it, you like it, and you're a homebrewer, you know, you already have the recipe to go brew your own. And even if you, like I said, if you can't find the particular beer you're looking for, you go to their website, which there'll be a link in the show notes, and they have all the Homework Series beers listed, and their recipes are on the Ballast Point website. So you can just go there and see if find you one you want to make, and the directions are there.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, they've got everything from dry stouts to IPAs to Hefeweizens and Kolsch.
I do want to try that Scotch Ale. That looks like going to be an interesting one.
Yep. So, anyway, if you're a beer enthusiast and you want to try your hand at homebrew, this might be a great way. The cool thing about this is you can actually try the beer, and then when you brew the beer, see how it compares.
Yeah, so you can get a professional brewed version and see how your homebrew recipe turned out.
But I've got to say, man, this Robust Porter is pretty good. It's a lot more complex than I was anticipating. I mean, I'm getting, you know, notes of a little bit of a sweet chocolate. I mean, there's the touch of, you know, chocolate and Belgian, you know, with some of the UK malt blends and stuff that's going on here. This is definitely a damn good beer.
Yeah, it's a blend of UK malts, chocolate rye, and Belgian candy sugar. Provides a sweet chocolate yet rich and earthy quality. Malt forward with an aroma full of roasted malt, toffee, dark fruit, and it's a National Homebrew Competition medal winner. And they also recommend it's a good dessert beer to pair with hearty foods. So whenever it gets warm enough for you to break out the grill, we may have to do some ribs and try this again.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I'm curious to pick up some of the other series, and this is a beer that I would love to, you know, sit down and brew myself. You know, we've got the Woot Stout going now, so that's another one we can compare, you know, our version versus the professionally bottled version. But it's always good to have a comparison and to see how your styles of beer line up, or if you, you know, get this out of the bottle and say, you know what, it's lacking, you know, a little bit of body or something of that nature, and you have the foundation for the ingredients. Well, you're not necessarily forced to use only those ingredients, so you can tweak, you can experiment, and, you know, see what kind of Franken beers you're able to concoct.
And looking at the recipe list, too, they have all grain and extract versions of the recipe. So if you're not up to doing an all grain batch yet. They have the simpler extract versions that you can try. Anyone who's into home brewing can kind of appreciate the difference. You know, extract is kind of your starter series. We've not got to a full all grain batch yet. We've done a partial grain, so we're getting there.
Yeah, we're progressing. But I've got to say, every beer that we brewed so far has turned out successful and delicious. So, you know, it's kind of cool that your friendly cigar nerds have, you know, been able to successfully brew good and drinkable beer.
Yeah, we haven't poisoned ourselves yet.
That we know of.
Don't worry, the alcohol, you know, kills most of the infection.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. For me, as far as a, you know, scale of 1 to 5, I'm at a 4.5.
I think I have to agree with you. This one's a, you know, I drink a lot of stouts. I haven't drank a whole lot of porters. You know, they're just a little bit. I don't know. How would you compare a stout to a porter? Porter, to me, I think is just a little bit.
It's not fruitier. As heavy, and it does have a little bit of the fruity essence and, you know, the darker malts that you get with the stouts, you know, that can yield some of the more coffee flavors. This isn't quite as coffee.
A little bit bitterness with a stout.
A porter to me is a little bit more balanced.
Yeah.
And I would say maybe not quite as full body and heavy on the stomach. You know, I can drink.
That's a good description.
You know, I can drink a stout, and a stout will fill me up. A porter, I can drink a couple before I get that full filling.
And this is also a 7% alcohol beer, so you get that, you know, nice alcohol effect if you have a couple of these. 7.8% by volume.
So, I don't know. I got to say, I'm absolutely stoked and really enjoying the batch number 6 robust porter.
All right, so go do your homework and drink a homework series beer.
This is some homework I can get behind and support.
Yeah, this one I might actually do instead of waiting until the morning it's due and trying to bullshit my way through like most of my college papers went.
Oh, no, we're still bullshitting our way through. Let's not lie to folks now.
True that.
All right, stay tuned for the next segment.
Yes, science! And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. It's time to get smart up in here. Are you ready to learn some stuff, Brad?
Yeah, man. What's on the agenda today?
Well, I know you're a fan of spiders, but are you a fan of Johnny Cash?
The Man in Black?
Hell yes.
Absolutely.
Well, you may be asking, like, what does spiders and Johnny Cash have to do with one another?
Well, I'm sure there's black spiders.
Well, there's probably a lot of black spiders. But recently, Johnny Cash, they've named a spider for him.
Well, is it a spider or is it a tarantula? Because what I see looks like a tarantula.
Well, spiders, tarantulas are spiders.
Yeah, but still, no, they're in a league of their own.
Yeah, they just finished a decade-long study researching tarantulas, and they discovered 14 new species of U.S. tarantulas. And one of them has been named. You're the one with the tarantula. What the hell's that first word?
Aphenophthalma.
Aphenophthalma Johnny Cashy is the species of that's been named for Johnny Cash.
Or maybe it's Aphenophthalma. I don't know. That's kind of a unique one. I've got a Brachypelma.
Yeah, the males of the species are all black, and where they kind of discovered it was in the not far from where Folsom Prison is, where he recorded his famous album Live from Folsom Prison.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah, the researcher that discovered it, he was the leader of the team. Chris Hamilton was a big Johnny Cash fan, and since said he was that close to kind of in the mountains around Folsom, that he's like, that's the perfect name for it. Yeah, Chris Hamilton works for the Florida Museum of Natural History, and he even has a Johnny Cash tattoo, he said, so it was definitely an inspiration.
I really want one of these. I want to add to my collection.
Yeah, you need a Man in Black for your contract. They've also had one named after John Lennon and one named after David Bowie.
That's awesome.
You just don't get bit by Ziggy Stardust. You'll be all right.
They'll be all right. These are New World tarantulas, so they're not going to cause much harm. Their uricating hairs are going to be much more ferocious than their bite will ever be. And there's some education for you.
I'm fine with, you know, non-poisonous spiders, but they're also very, very big. And
I mean, that's the thing. Like, they're big, but, you know, I mean, even my rose hair when she was 5 or 6 years old, I mean, it was basically like a mosquito bite. Like, it itched. It didn't hurt, per se, so.
Still, it's not something you want to look down and see on your leg if you're not expecting it to be there. Like, I'll pick up a snake all day, and I'm not afraid of spiders, but I don't want to touch one either.
I don't know. It's rather
we got a healthy, like, I'm not going to fuck with you, you don't fuck with me attitude.
That's a good attitude to have, just in general.
Also, you know, because it's not science without a robot story.
Oh, dear God. This again.
We now have a beer pong playing robot.
Did we need that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we did. Well,
I mean, this just seems, I'm kind of watching the snippet video here, and I mean, this thing is 100 for 100. Like, yeah. You don't want to play against that. Like,
yeah, this company called Empire has built a robot they call the VersaBall Gripper, and basically it wasn't designed for beer pong, but that was just kind of a happy medium that they found. Basically, this thing is made to pick up fragile objects without, you know, like a robot hand may break like a light bulb or you know, delicate objects. But basically, this thing, the hand of it is a big sandbag. And kind of like when you buy coffee or whatever and it's vacuum sealed, how it's, you know, hard like a brick, but then as soon as air gets into the bag, it all loosens up again. And that's how this kind of works. When air is pumped into the gripper, it, you know, the sand gets pliable and it can kind of squish over an object. But then when air is sucked out, it hardens in that position and can pick stuff up without applying too much pressure.
Damn. That's kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean,
and one of the side effects
if
they
I'm
found
playing beer pong, that's the thing I want on my team.
One of the side effects they found is if they pump the air in, like a little bit of extra air into the bag, or pump the air in faster, instead of just releasing the object, it can actually throw an object. And yeah, they figured out that was the, not only could they throw objects, but they could throw them very accurately, and it was the perfect, beer pong was the perfect test of its accuracy.
I mean, that just goes to show the consistency. That's what it takes, folks. Repetition, repetition, repetition.
Yeah, this year at the CES, they you know, showed off the robot and apparently challenged a bunch of world-ranked beer pong champions, which I didn't know that was even a thing. And I've been in a movie about beer pong. But the robot, like, destroyed the masters of beer pong. So,
of course they did. Just another sign of the impending robot doom.
And not only can they kill us all now, they can take from us our beer pong as well.
I don't know. Figure out a way to engineer some beanbags into this. It's going to be a hell of a cornhole player, too.
Oh, shit. That's right.
College frats everywhere are doomed.
Freaking MIT and Georgia Tech's beer pong team is going to be, like, unstoppable this year. Prank freaking robot. Robot beer pong players. Another thing, you know, we've talked about drones, and I really want to buy one. Well,
you know what? There was a study released, or not a study, but some stats released, and it is now official that more people now own. There are more registered drones than there are airlines in the world. I think there's like 300 and something thousand registered, you know, airplanes, and there's 330,000 registered drones, if I remember the figures correctly.
Damn. Well, that's one of the problems with there being so many drones. It's, and the fact that they could fly really high up to a point where they could be a threat to approaching aircraft, or if someone tried to, you know, terrorists weaponize these things.
I mean, not only that, just the invasion of privacy that could come with it. I mean, you know, you got this drone hovering over your, you know, backyard or whatever. Like, I've heard a lot of stories of people, you know, freaking taking shotguns and blasting drones.
Yeah, there's
out
some
of
good
air.
Videos.
Like, but shoot. That's not always the most practical and effective method, especially if you're in a neighborhood environment.
And speaking of which, there are some groups working on anti-drone technology, and sometimes the high-tech solution is not the best solution. Sometimes you got to go old school, and there's nothing more old school than falconry. Dutch police have been training eagles and birds of prey to attack drones.
Fucking America.
Well, actually, it's Belgium. But
America.
Friggin' bald eagles taking out drones. I mean, that's America, damn. But yeah, basically they train these hawks and other, you know, birds of prey to see the drones as prey. And like I said, if you've ever seen a falconry demonstration, you know, these birds can be very accurate.
Accurate. And you know, I think the biggest thing is they're training them, you know, to not injure themselves. So they're able to successfully, you know, take down a drone 100% of the time, you know, without injury.
Because, you know, an eagle's claws and feet are very, you know, hard anyway. Cause,
yeah, dude, and you don't want to fuck with those talons.
No. And they say, you know, the damage that they receive from attacking a drone is no more than the damage they receive from, you know, attacking a regular prey. You know, there's going to be some cuts and scrapes when a forest creature fights back. But... That's just pretty badass to snatch freaking drones out of the sky. Like, I want to see that.
I mean, you
that
just hear
GoPro
the screech.
Video.
Next thing you know, there's just a little drone on the ground. Like, you just monitors just black out and like, damn. That's awesome. Though.
Especially if they, like, you know, grab them and capture them and then take them back to wherever. You just get like a fucking, like, you play fetch with your hawk.
The fucking eagles are using damn drones to teach their babies to fly and shit. Like,
damn. Yeah, I mean, that I want to see the YouTube video, the GoPro videos of that, of like freaking hawks attack. I think I've seen one where it was not a trained hawk, but yeah, it did not appreciate the drone in its territory.
Well, at least nature's here to help us with our demises.
But anyway, and this is just off the top of my head. I saw it earlier, but I don't have any actual research on it. Have you seen these?
So how do I know it's true?
Because it's on Facebook. Everything on Facebook's true. It's
found it on the internet, man.
No, but we were talking about robots. It's a new motion tracking projector stuff where basically it will project an image on your face and follow you as you move your head. So it can actually project another person's face or robot, monster, whatever you want to program it, and it will track and move with your face. So
man,
it's
taking
like
some animatronic shit to a whole nother level. Oh, like, yeah. I can see the haunt industry, like,
hell yeah. I mean, I've known
salivating
some
over this.
Some badass, you know, makeup effects guys. If you can just project that stuff on digitally, I mean, that's gonna be pretty awesome. I mean, you could change it, and you know, just by flicking a button, and all of a sudden they're a different character. I mean, it's kind of cool.
I mean, wouldn't that be crazy, though? Like, you're just standing next to somebody normal, and then, like, as quick as you can glance away and glance back, like, they're fucking all monster-fied or some shit.
Oh, yeah, because, like, I mean, it can look like your face, and all of a sudden, like, you know, your skin and stuff starts melting off. It'd be some badass shit. As long as we're getting kind of spooky, Japanese taxi drivers report seeing ghost passengers.
Man, that was a nice segue. Like, if I didn't know better, I'd think you planned that shit.
Oh, yeah. Not at all. I'm not that professional. But Yuka Kudo, a senior at Tohoku Gakuin University, majoring in sociology, just released a study or a thesis paper where they interviewed 100 different taxi drivers in Ishinomaki Province or whatever, and asked them if they had saw anything unusual in part of her survey she was doing. And after the March 2011 tsunamis, there were several taxi drivers that reported stories of them picking up passengers that were possibly ghosts, where they, you know, said weird stuff to them, disappeared out of the taxi. And
where's Mulder and Scully?
Exactly. I mean, X-Files is back. They're gonna have to do like a Japanese episode. But yeah, they, you know, and these taxi drivers that they talked to, like, some of them, like, you know, showed them their logbooks where they had a unpaid for client because they picked somebody up, and whenever they got where they're going, the person just disappeared.
We want to believe.
I need that poster. But, you know, even though it's, you know, to bring it back into the science side of it, psychiatrists have identified, which may be the cause of this, and it could also kind of explain, you know, other ghost sightings. They call it grief hallucinations, and apparently it's common as a reaction to, you know, bereavement to think you're seeing past loved ones, you know, dead people, whatever. And
well, I mean, the human psyche as a whole is programmed to detect faces. Like, you know, I mean, like the whole inkblot test that psychologists and stuff like that often use. I mean, your brain will automatically, you know, start forming and manipulating. I mean, that's why oftentimes you're able to look at clouds or, you know, other shit and like, oh, I see a face and look away and look back at it and say, what?
Yeah, but Agneta Grimbley, a researcher at the University of Gothenburg, Grimbley? Sweden, apparently they surveyed 14 men and 36 women during the first year after a death of a spouse, and apparently this was like these, you know, hallucinations. And you always hear people think, "Oh, I thought I heard somebody," you know, and they say these hallucinations or, you know, illusions are considered helpful and actually kind of helps in the, you know, getting over it process.
Kind of the whole closure aspect of things. No, that's cool.
Kind of, you know, weans you off of, you know, not seeing somebody every day instead of that, you know, hard break you get when something like that happens. I thought it was an interesting kind of scientific explanation for ghosts and whatnot.
That's what I go through when we have a bye week of not podcasting.
Yeah, you find yourself talking to yourself, thinking the mics are on. Mm-hmm.
I start imagining listeners.
This basement's only haunted by like old cigars and old podcasts.
What more would you need?
The only dead things down here is all these empty beer bottles. And with that, we'll be right back.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One Podcast Network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
Welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
Yeah, so, you know, we just wrapped up from the Super Bowl, and I gotta say, there was a trailer released for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was already excited based on the previous trailers, but now that I've gotten to see Krang, I am even more excited.
I mean, we already said that, like, pretty much the two things I wanted to see in Ninja Turtles was Casey Jones and a fucking turtle van, and that already happened. But then there's been the rumor that we're getting Krang, and now it's finally confirmed. I mean, they showed freaking Krang, and he looks just like a badass version of his old original costume.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was funny. Like,
it's a bald Michelangelo, robot guy.
Michelangelo getting the shit scared out of him.
Dude is like kind of pokes on the belly, and the frick his face just comes up against the glass. He's like, oh shit.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't too impressed with the Super Bowl itself overall.
Well, I don't care. The only reason I went to like a Super Bowl party was to eat hot wings and smoke cigars.
Did you accomplish both of those things?
I did.
All right, I'd say that's a win.
Drank some Innocent Gun bourbon barrel stout, smoked a Cohiba, and ate a bunch of free hot wings.
Nice.
Even got a cigar hat out of it. It was a pretty successful evening.
That's a pretty good haul, then. I'd say that's a win all the way around. So, I don't know, man. I'm just really excited. I mean, you know, I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of people bash, you know, Michael Bay and stuff, but
you know what? I was hating a little bit on the first film.
Yeah, I think he took like all the criticism that it wasn't enough like the cartoon or the comic book that, you know, he kind of took that advice to heart. I mean, and this, like I said, this version is what I wanted to see out of the original movie.
And you know, I'm still going into this 100% knowing what to expect with a Michael Bay film. Now, maybe I'm surprised. Maybe this is going to be a little bit different. But the way that the turtles interact with one another, things of that nature, this feels
it looks much, a lot funnier than the last one. And, you know, it reminded me so much of a live-action version of the cartoon. Especially, you see the Terror Dome. But, it looks like some weird stuff out of Transformers now. But it's the freaking Terror Dome. And there's a Krang.
And the turtle van grew arms.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
So, I don't know. I'm curious to see where it goes. I'm going to remain
excited. It's a
excited.
Transformer. Probably have a cameo by
God,
Optimus
the
Prime.
The turtles meet the Transformers, and there's going to be this big mashup.
The turtle van already had arms. I mean, it's getting close to a freaking Transformer.
Instead of the Foot Clan, we got the Decepticon Clan. I mean...
Well, Michael Bay is coming back to direct the next Transformers movie, so who knows? Maybe the Turtles will get a cameo.
Or you know what? I see them all chilling down in, you know, the sewers in the dojo, and you know they're fucking watching Transformers. Like I feel like that's going to be a thing. Like,
of course.
So I don't know. You got to have the cross promotions in there. So, you know, I've already bought my Deadpool tickets. Gonna switch gears. I didn't even segue. That was awesome.
Suck. I don't know when I'm gonna have a chance to see it.
Yeah, I already pre-ordered that shit, so I'm gonna go check it out in IMAX. I'm extremely excited for that movie as well. But apparently, Deadpool sequel has already been greenlit by Fox.
Nice. Yeah, I heard some rumors of what Ryan Reynolds is wanting to come of the second one, and he wants there to be a Cable to be in it and have like kind of like an X-Force movie. And I gotta say, Cable was always a badass character. So yeah, I'd like to see, you know, I've seen most of the, now that we're getting, you know, Psylocke. And so I think I've seen most of my, you know, old favorite X-Men characters in movie form now, but I've not seen Cable yet. Either Cable or Bishop, would be a badass, live action. As long as we're doing the whole time travel thing, you know, Bishop could show up. He was always a badass character too.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I was kind of hoping for a sequel to Deadpool, and you know, I was poking around on the interwebs a bit. Apparently, you know, you'd brought this to my but Rotten Tomatoes,
yeah, 100% rating.
Like that's insane. And to think that this is a rated R superhero movie, and people are, you know, stark raving mad, I mean, that, you know, it is going, yeah, to be rated R and
we've
stuff.
We've not had a R rated superhero movie since maybe the original, you know, not the, you know, the last Punisher movie that came out, but like the old Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Yeah,
that may be the last R-rated one we have.
So I don't know, you know, I don't think that, you know, Tim Miller has officially signed on to the sequel yet. I mean, but you know, I imagine they're going to keep the same creative team and stuff of that nature, depending on the film's success. And you know, Ryan Reynolds has already pretty much come out and said, I never want to stop being the anti-hero.
Yeah, because he pretty much stole the suit at the end of the film. Like, he's like, yeah, the last day of filming, I go to walk off, like, you want to take the suit off? He's like, hell no. I've been waiting 10 years to make this movie. I'm taking the suit. Yeah. Like, try to take this from me.
I wonder what the value of that suit is.
Well, I know Affleck tried to take the Batman suit after Batman v Superman, and they told me it would be $100,000 if he wanted to keep it, and he was like, no, I'm not doing it. But Ryan was like,
photo.
Fuck you, I'm taking this thing.
It's red and black cloth. It'll be okay.
And I've seen pictures where he like went out on Halloween trick-or-treating with a bunch of kids in the Deadpool costume. I mean, you know, that guy probably just wears it around his house all day.
I mean, you gotta have fun playing that role. I mean, you know.
Yes.
And Deadpool's become such a recognized character.
And like I said, I don't think there's a better actor to play Deadpool. I mean, Ryan Reynolds,
no.
He has the physiology to do action. We, you know, he's like, he was badass in the Blade Trinity, so we know he can do an action movie. And seeing him, I mean, he's definitely got the comedic element and the physicality to play Deadpool.
I just think the fact that he's such a big fan of Deadpool, that's what's going to sell the character.
Yeah.
Is it? you know, if they just brought, I mean, you know, I'm going to pick on Tom Holland because I'm still wondering who the fuck that is, but...
Two more months, we'll find out. Yeah.
I mean, you know, to bring him to do Spider-Man, you know, I'm like, you know, if they were to do the same thing to Deadpool, like, it wouldn't have the same feel. It wouldn't have the same excitement. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I love the marketing campaigns that they've did for the yes. film so far.
All the, like, you've seen the one where he's talking about nut cancer and...
yes.
Oh, man.
What was the video you showed me, too, where... He's playing with a balloon sword.
Yeah, it's him and Olivia Munn, who is in the new X-Men movie we're talking about. And she's like doing all this like badass tricks with a sword. And he just pulls out this inflatable like balloon sword and smacks her with it. It's like the most Deadpool thing.
Typical smartass. So, another film that I was really anticipating was... Ready Player One. I love the book by Ernest Klein. We've talked about it. We reviewed it on the podcast. If people still haven't read the book, I mean, that's one that I've already read three times now. Like, it doesn't get old. But basically, the release date now has been pushed back just to minimize competition with... the newly rescheduled Star Wars Episode 8, which is set to release in December 2017. So, Ready Player One has been moved to 2018, and that'll come out on...
Goddamn Kylo Ren.
But it comes out...
my Ready Player One.
But it comes out March 30th. So,
yeah, okay,
you
know, nice
that'll
birthday
be our birthday
present,
month,
yeah.
You know, so in a way, it'll kind of be a nice present, so... But I'm really stoked to see that film. I'm kind of curious how they're going to pull it all off with all of the references and everything else. So it'll be exciting to see.
I mean, if anyone's got enough money to throw at the problem, it's Spielberg.
Yes.
And, you know, he probably made
a lot of clout comes with that name.
And he's made half of the properties that they're probably going to reference anyway. But yeah, I mean, there's not been a movie with that many properties tied in together since... I don't know, maybe Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Because that one had like Disney, Warner Brothers, everyone.
Yeah, that had a lot of properties.
More recently, Wreck-It Ralph? That kind of combined a lot of different video game properties.
Yeah, I don't know.
Impossible, but
I almost felt like, Pixels tried to play with that genre a little bit, but I still have not seen the movie.
It's on Normflix.
But,
I didn't mispronounce that. I meant Normflix.
But it just doesn't have the following. It didn't create the level of excitement that I think Ready Player One. I mean, there's so much nostalgia.
When I saw Pixels, it wasn't a bad movie, but it wasn't the greatest Adam Sandler movie. I mean, it was kind of a... If you grew up in the 80s, it was a good movie because it was hardcore 80s nostalgia. But if you were going in there as a kid trying to see this, you probably didn't get half the references or understand who most of the characters were in the movie.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, I'm kind of curious to see what happens with it. And, you know, since we've already talked about it a little bit, you know, with the Deadpool intro, let's talk about this new X-Men trailer that we've got. What's your thoughts on it?
It looks pretty badass. With the X-Men, well, the original trilogy of X-Men movies, I wasn't a huge fan of, especially the last one where they fucked up, or not that one, Wolverine Origins with the worst version of Deadpool.
Yeah, but can since we not talk about that?
The X-Men First Class and whatever the last one was, they've done a good job. They've definitely... improved on the X-Men franchise with the last couple movies.
I think they
movies.
Figured out where they went wrong
yeah.
and, you know, made some serious corrections.
So this one looks pretty badass. I mean, like I said, Olivia Munn, who I've not really followed since Attack of the Show, she looks pretty badass. I mean, she looks like Psylocke. I mean, she's probably the perfect character to play that role.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm curious to see this one.
My only thing I don't like about it is... the look of Apocalypse. And it's the guy who played Poe Dameron in Star Wars, but he looks like freaking Ivan Ooze from the freaking Power Rangers show. I mean, it just does not look like Apocalypse.
Fucking Ivan Ooze.
There's your reference.
Yeah. Take that, kids. I'll see you do your Google searches now.
That reminds me, speaking of Power Rangers, because they have announced there's a new live-action Power Rangers in the moot. Have you seen who they've cast as Rita Repulsa?
No.
I can't remember her name now. The girl from Zack and Mary Make a Porno, Elizabeth Banks. She's playing Rita Repulsa.
I can't see that in my head. I don't see that being a good fit for her character, but
it's
how long ago was that movie though? Shit. Like that was what, 2000.
Well, she's been in she actually directed the Pitch Perfect movies. So she's been doing stuff. So I mean, and she's a good comedic actress. You might be add a little comedy to the role. I mean, how can you be serious playing Rita? I
mean, make my monsters grow.
Exactly. You need a good comedic actor just to portray the weirdness of that character.
So yeah, you know, that's a dynamic. I don't know. I had a hard time getting into Power Rangers. I don't know. Like, it just wasn't a cool thing to do, I guess.
I mean, I watched like the original series, you know, first couple series, but yeah, I outgrew that like pretty quick.
Yeah, I just don't think I ever grew into it. So we're gonna switch gears a little bit. Talk about some gorier subjects. Halloween. How about a Saw 8?
Freaking make another Saw movie?
Yeah, apparently.
What the hell?
Yeah, Lionsgate's reportedly working on an 8 Saw movie called Saw Legacy. So I don't know, you know? I mean, it's weird, you know? We had the last movie, Saw 3D, the final chapter or some shit like that, so...
Yeah, there's been a lot of those. I've watched the first couple, but I think I gave up a few iterations ago.
But I don't know, you know? Like, it looks like they're going to bring some of the writers behind films such as Sorority Row and Piranha 3D.
Oh, God.
So, I don't know, like...
This may be the cheesiest version of Saw yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is one franchise that just... It's kind of gone downhill as it's progressed, like...
Oh, it's going to get, like, seriously campy. It's gonna, speaking of horror, I heard... I don't even have a title of it yet, but Robert Englund supposedly putting together a new horror movie, and they're saying it's going to be, like, the Expendables of horror. They're getting pretty much every old horror movie actor going to be in one movie.
Holy crap.
Like I said, so far awesome. It's just been kind of announced. There's not really any details yet, but pretty much they're saying it's the Expendables of horror.
Like, I don't know. I would love some throwbacks to Dee Snider, and I'd love to see, you know, Rob Zombie collaborate with that. Like, I saw some articles, you know, that basically he had put it out there, basically, you know, asking fans if they would like to see a return of the Firefly family. You know, yeah. So who knows, you know? I mean, Rob Zombie, you can never tell. So
bring Chris Hardwick back. Put him in another, another one.
But, you know, keeping on with the gorier thing, the new Doom game. I saw, you know, some of the gameplay trailers and stuff where this shit looks badass. And even Conan doing, you know, his segment with Marshawn Lynch.
He got an early copy and did an episode of his YouTube thing, Clueless Gamer, that it looks badass. I mean, I've been a fan of Doom forever. And
back in the old MS-DOS days, yo.
Oh, hell yeah. The freaking...
playing that shit on 8-bit.
The God Code.
IDKFA, IDDQD, IDBEHOLD. Like, dude, I still got that shit memorized.
IDIAMLAME was the God Code. I remember that one. But yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the videos, and there's like hands-on fighting too. It looks like where you can just walk up and rip monsters apart with your bare hands, and oh, it looks awesome. I can't wait to play it.
And this one, you know, looked a lot different. The game that we got, I don't know, shit, probably 5-6 years ago now.
Probably longer than that, because there was a re-release version of. Well, I think there was like a Doom 3 or something. I don't think I ever played that. The last one I played was the Doom on the original Xbox, And that was badass because it was so
cool. Well, I mean, it was so survival horror.
But, yeah, you know, because you had to have a flashlight and you couldn't put your flashlight on your gun. You had to use it separately. So you'd be walking around with a flashlight and a monster would come out and then you'd have to switch to your gun before it got you. And that just added so much stress to that game.
Which, in a way, I was like, this game is set in the future. Like, we're colonizing Mars, essentially, like... But we haven't figured out how to mount a flashlight onto our weapon system.
There must be no duct tape in the future.
I don't know. Like,
I think there eventually was a code where you could have the light and the gun out at the same time. But yeah, in the original version, it was you just had to switch, and you also had to find batteries too because you would run out of power on your
flashlights.
On your flashlights. Oh yeah, that game was so bad. I mean, there was like certain. There was one level too where there was like there really wasn't even monsters for a while. You're walking around everything's covered in blood. And you can hear, like, just voices. And then you see a flash of something, and by the time you pulled out your gun, it would just disappear. Like, the game would, like, screw with you.
Yeah. It was very much a psychological, you know, horror survival game for all intent and purposes.
I mean, my buddy pissed himself playing that game because he was like, playing it in the middle of the night on the big screen and thought he was by himself, and one of, like, his kids, like, creeped up on him and got, like, right next to him. He was like, what are you doing? He's, like, about threw his freaking controller through the screen.
I mean, that was the way to experience the game. Lights off. I mean, one, you couldn't have any glare because then you couldn't see shit that you were doing anyway because the game was so dark. But, you know, playing with 5.1 or 7.1 headphones, dude, that
especially
shit
with
was
the
creepy.
Surround
you could
sound,
hear all
you,
the
you would
water
hear monsters
droplets.
Behind you and stuff. It was so creepy. Yeah, I can't. I've got to buy a new system just so I can play this game.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be over here every day playing it on your system.
Yeah, it looks like they might have added, you know, kind of like a little bit of a zombie equivalent, you know, like a survival mode or something, so you can, you know, see how long you can survive or something of that nature. So that may make a fun challenge. And I kind of like the fact that they introduced a co-op online, too, although it was kind of a shitty game experience, but it allowed you to at least get a little bit of help now and then.
Yeah, and I think it may even have like a, you know, kind of like a... Black Ops, you know, like a multiplayer online where you can do some good old deathmatch.
Yep. So, last on the list is The Return of the X-Files.
Hell yes.
I'm really digging the updated conspiracy. I like where they're taking the series.
Yeah, and this we're at the recording of this, we're like 3 episodes in. We still got 3 more to go. And I got to say, the last episode I saw, which was directed by Darren Morgan, some of the guys who wrote some of the original. He wrote a lot of the funnier X-Files episodes where they just did weird stuff. And this one was one of those. I mean, there was like a whole bunch of comedians in the episode. And I said, this has been the, not only was it the funniest episode far, it was the one that felt most like the original X-Files. Just, it was so badass.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really, really enjoying this episode. Or this series. I hope it continues. I mean, because it's felt like the X-Files, and I like the fact of, you know, how all of the previous seasons were just like a big F you to Mulder and Scully. Like, all it was to basically send them on wild goose chases while the real, you know, conspiracies and everything were, you know, able to be enacted.
And I love the fact, too, and especially in that last episode, because that's one thing I've been going back and watching the originals, and this was at a time where there was no internet. There was no smartphones where everyone had a camera. And they kind of joke about that now, because he's like, you know, that's one of the things, like, you know, on that episode is, like, you see Mulder, like, just throwing a whole bunch of files away, and he's like, since we've been gone, like, half of the stuff that was X-Files, they figured out. And it's like, he's going through a lot of, like, classic, like, you know, urban stories and stuff, like, oh yeah, they figured out this was just ice crystals, and like, yeah. because like I said, X-Files existed in a time before the internet where you couldn't Google shit, so it was just fun. And that, and you know, they kind of flipped the dynamic, because, you know, Mulder's kind of getting depressed, like, you know, there really is no aliens or anything anymore, and like, and kind of Scully is like the believer in the episode, and Mulder is the skeptic, and she's like, well, hey, there's this. He's like, no, it's probably, you know, if it really was something, someone who had, everyone has a camera on them now, they would have got better pictures of it. And he's just starting trying to explain away, like, every weird thing they see. It just kind of flipped the whole, like, you know, Mulder-Scully dynamic. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I'm really enjoying it, and that's what I got for Nerd News.
All right. Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. Go to our Facebook page. Like it. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Cigar Nerd Pod. Go to iTunes, leave us a review, give us some 5-star, spread the word of the Cigar Nerds. You can pick up some merchandise at our Zazzle store, zazzle.com/cigarnerds. And Real Men Smoke Cigars has the Cigar Nerds smoking shirt. You want to pick that up. And as Jack Burton always says, may the bird of liberty never lose a feather. Peace.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.